Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Griplocked preview of the Dynamic Discs Open at the same home, but a new home.
Champions Landing.
Champions Landing now. Emporia Country Club has been renamed, rebranded to Champions Landing. It was previously known as Emporia Country Club. It'll be interesting to see this course.
I like the name.
We're really interesting to see the course maintenance this year and as the course progresses and years go on with it under new ownership of Jeremy Rusko and team now, because I don't believe it's still planned to be a golf course, if I remember correctly.
No, I think it is.
Oh, never mind.
I think there is going to be golf. I can't.
But that's not the main focus.
I think it's supposed to be a complex, and I think it's going to evolve a little bit, because I remember him saying, I think ultimately he did say like golf, disc golf, pickleball, like all these things. I know he wants it to be a multi-sports complex, yeah. And I think he's going to build baseball fields, that sort of thing.
It was a nine-hole golf course.
Yeah, I think they're going to downsize it, because I also think eventually the disc golf course is going to be redesigned more extreme than it is right now. It will be interesting, though, like, how much of the golf staff is still on right now? Like, how manicured is it? And cutting fairways is one thing, but, like, you know, and a lot of this doesn't even have to do with the disc golf course. It's more so the appearance.
Yeah, it's the optics.
It's not going to play. Like, will the golf green just look kind of dead and chewed
up?
Well,
I did find it interesting hole one this year, because there were some mostly minor changes out there on the course this year. But, like, hole one, for instance, I thought it was interesting. The golf green's not OB this year. It was OB last year. I don't know what, like, if that points to anything, or if it just for the hole to be, maybe, well, because it's not a golf course primarily now, they don't care about the greens getting hurt a little bit.
Probably. Yeah.
But I found like that interesting.
From what I've seen footage wise, it looks green. Like, it looks like it's been,
well, it's April. Yeah. Everything's
yeah.
Green.
As I'm saying, like, at least it looks like right now, like, it's still, it looks pretty out there. I've seen a lot of people throwing certain holes on Instagram and whatnot. And like, it still looks same. And, you know, we wouldn't see long-term effects.
No, that's what I'm saying.
If they were negative for a long time.
And then next year, and then next year, and then, like, 5 years from now is when it'll be really interesting to kind of see what this course looks like. But like I was saying, it's mostly minor changes. Some of the OB turned to hazard. Some of the OB moved slightly. But the only real, like, the drop zone on 16 moved to on the island instead of throwing from across the island. And, like, there's changes like that that will affect the course slightly, but it won't really affect it drastically. Hole 18 is the only really big change I noticed looking through the caddy
book. I disagree. I think 16 is a massive change, because it now means
that it's a stroke.
Right, but it used to mean the fact that they made, and you will talk about hole 18, they made both of these changes down the stretch. It's going to decide the end of the tournament. Like, there's a good chance it will, because the old hole 16, if you go first and you throw in the water, that person, all they had to do to hit the island, and they're laying up and beating you. Like, that's just the reality of what's happening. They can just chuck it to the back wall, lay it up, tap in, and they just gain a stroke on you. Now, if you chuck it and hit the back wall and the person before you hit the water, you're not looking at it like they now potentially have a much better chance of tying you on the hole.
Though.
Right, but I'm saying they have a way higher chance of tying you on that hole.
Here's an interesting thing. With the old drop zone, I'm sure there's more players, but the player I remember historically, like, the only make was Ricky. That one year drilled it, but I'm sure there's
a few each year. That was a notable one.
With the putt, if you go in the water, pretty much everyone's running the putt, because it looks to be like a 30 to 35 footer.
I have to see it. Like, clearly, because in my opinion, if it's a 30 footer at the water, that's too close.
That's what the caddy book shows.
I don't think it can be in the circle, though. Drop zones. Is that even a
reason? It looked like it's right outside. Like,
so
it looks like
okay,
it's
so let's
edge.
Say it's 34 feet, like, circle's edge. I feel like that, I'd like to still see it be like, I like the idea that if a player needs to run it, they have the option and it's doable. Like, that's fine. But I don't like the pros are too good at that putt that I don't like giving them, like, I don't like giving them, like, let's say a 70% chance of saving par.
But what's interesting,
if your best pros are making 70% of the 34
footers. I agree. I don't like the location of it, but I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second here, because this is like their dream scenario. What I was going to say.
Yeah.
Is it is interesting that I throw onto the island, I have a 20 footer for my two. You miss the island. You now have a 35 footer for your three.
Well, you want to hear
you
my
run
dream
it,
scenario?
Boom, OB into the water. You now have a tap out five.
Yeah.
I have a 15 footer for two. I just gained three strokes. That wasn't possible before.
Yeah.
It does bring more threes into play, which is why I don't like it, because it, for the best putters in the world, the best players in the world, they're making that putt enough that it's like, if they play four rounds out there and
also,
they go OB twice, they're probably making.
Now, to be fair, wind typically comes off the water. If they're putting that into a headwind, it'll probably just turn it.
It is a scary
actually
putt.
Actually, what it'll probably turn into is just almost a guaranteed four a lot of the rounds.
Always a guarantee four, because if you're laying up from on that island, you're putting it under the basket, and you can have a four every time you won on that hole. Yeah. But realistically, you should have had a four every time you wanted with the old drop zone too.
My dream scenario is that if you throw into the water, you pick up another disc and you throw again.
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
If you have to do a drop zone, walk about 20 feet to your left, drop it, throw from the hair. Like, I want to see them have to cross the water on that difficult shot, because it's not the hardest shot in the world. It gets a lot harder when the wind picks up. But yeah, that's how if I have an awesome island hole, I want to see it play out that way.
What I would like is, like, I understand hole 17 at USDGC, like, it's gotten softer over the years. Before, you just emptied your bag. Now you you throw like two or three shots, then you go to a drop zone on the island. I wouldn't mind almost that model here, where you throw a tee shot, you miss the island, you re-tee. Okay, you miss the island again. If you miss it a second time, you now proceed to a drop zone that's like 150 feet across the water.
Yeah.
You miss that, now you proceed to the old drop zone. And then you're there until you're safe.
Yeah.
Someone could take a six or an eight.
It's just exciting.
I love that.
It builds a lot more pressure when you know that at some point
it's always
I'm
going
to have to cross this water. Like, you just have to get it done. And the fact that you're losing discs at the time you're doing it. Okay, now I'm on my first choice disc. Now I'm on my second choice disc. Now I'm on my third. Like, I think that's just so exciting. And I know that there's dumb PDGA rules that don't allow it to be as perfect as we want. I think they should change that. I think that these courses should be able to operate on rules that C tiers don't, and I think that's reasonable. But I don't know. Yeah, I think the new drops, it'll be interesting. I'm sure it will provide suspense, because, you know, if your favorite player is the one that threw in the water, you're going to be like, well, they still have a chance. So, I mean, there's suspense in that regard. But you're going to feel a little bit robbed if, like I said, scenario plays out where your favorite player is the one that got the island, and he's not really given any advantage for that, because, you know.
Well, he still has a putt for a stroke.
It depends. Well, like I said, it depends on how close this drop zone is. Because if the drop zone is at the furthest point you could get from the basket on the island, I have less issue. If it's not to where somebody could hit the island and be further than the drop zone, I think that's a big issue.
I think it'll be judging solely on the caddy book, which we saw the caddy book on 18, not accurate. Judging solely on the caddy book, it looks like you could be on the island if you're on like the very fringe and be farther than the drop zone.
Yeah, I just don't know.
But like it,
I would just like to know their reasoning. I'd like to know their reasoning. I think it seems like the only reasoning could be that they wanted people to be able to save their three more often. And
I'm wondering if
threw it in the water.
Like, what I'm saying is, I'm wondering if the logic was from the old drop zone, five was basically never in play. From this drop zone, a three and a five are in play.
Because
it's close enough that people... I disagree with this logic for drop zones, but it's like hole eight at Maple Hill, where it's close. I know hole eight's farther than this, but it's close enough that people will want to run it, and they're running it at the water. Hole eight is like a 45 or 50 footer, I think, at Maple Hill.
Oh, you're talking about the drop zone.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm saying, I think that's almost the logic here of like, you're welcome to run it, but if you miss this, you're almost guaranteed in the water.
I think on a par three that is not super long and it is a stock shot, the difficulty that is brought into it a lot of times is the pressure of the shot.
Yes.
I think on a hole like that, it is perfectly okay to say, you missed, unless you do something stupendous, you're taking bogey. Like that to me is so fine. I'm so okay with that. I didn't mind the old one. Like, you had a chance, just a very long outside chance. Like I said, the best putters in the world, if the wind was down, you know, they have probably a much better than 50% chance of saving their par. Yeah. And I think it should be lower than that.
Well, I think the, because the reality here is if Ricky Wysocki has a two-stroke lead.
Because you're not in the rough. You went in the water.
Or like a three-stroke lead, like, let's say Ricky has a three-stroke lead. There is zero chance, unless he tries to lose it, that he loses it on that hole.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's okay. But if the drop zone was re-throwing across the water and you're like throwing till you make it, now that hole becomes way more interesting. Because right now, a shot goes in the water. If a player has the strokes to play with, it's just going to be a boring layup, a tap out, and it's done. If a player needs it, it's going to be a somewhat exciting putt, but realistically, they're probably hitting metal. They're either making it or it's dropping, tap out, it's done. I don't think it really accomplished what I would imagine they're trying to accomplish, but we'll have to see it play out. Worst case scenario, it plays out where the person in the lead throws a bad shot, goes in the water, hits the putt, The other person is farther away on the island, misses the putt. They stay tied through the hole, even though one person made the island, one person didn't. That's about the worst case
scenario. Yeah, I would not enjoy that. Like I said, it's when I think when you introduce a water island hole, the penalty of water should be almost always bogey. You have a little chance of saving your par, just a little one, not a 35-footer wide open at the basket.
Yeah. Now, the main change to this course...
I understand there's water behind it. I understand that. But it doesn't change the fact that the best
players in the world... It's still open 30-footer.
Like, yeah, it's still wide open 30-footer.
And it might be 40 or 45.
In a scenario where
we're basing this on the cat book.
Right, right. But in a scenario where you have to make it, the water does not matter behind it. It's just you in the basket because you're not thinking about that.
Now, if you're Andrew Presnell... It might. 45-footer. Not only is there water behind it, you only got one putter.
That's true. That's a good point.
Something to think about.
Yeah.
Main change here, like design-wise, main change is hole 18. MPO and FPO tee from their same tees, but now the green is across the water on an island. From the caddy book, I was really excited about it. I watched it on video. The island's way bigger than the caddy book depicted.
Huge.
Because the caddy book depicted it as basically the circle. And I'm like, that's fascinating. Like, that could be really tricky. Looking at it, it looks to be like maybe a 60-foot circle almost.
I think it
might be wide,
very wide.
Yeah.
My thought process is a par five. If people are not enticed to go for the three, which I can't decide if they will be because I haven't seen enough footage on it yet, and there is trees that kind of block the corner. So if people aren't enticed to go for the three, then I think that...
It looks like a really easy four.
Yeah, it seems like a... And we actually had a guy who played for Emporia State talk to us about it. He's playing in this event. He said, like, he's a 970-rated player, and he did not have a ton of trouble making... He was like, I had not a ton of trouble making the four, and the five seemed like it would be a cakewalk. So I think if guys play it smart, it's going to be a pretty, like I said, a pretty easy birdie. I don't really... we'll have to see how it plays out, but I don't know if it's scenic, but I don't know if it's going to be super effective. I think they could have tightened up the island.
I don't mind the change.
No, it's a good
concept. But I don't know if the change increases the scoring separation.
Well, that par four was hard.
That's what I'm saying.
That par four was tough. But to be fair, the par four, like, there was, OB was absolutely in play on that approach. If you went for birdie, like, I would say 3, 4, and 5 were all in play on that par four. I think on this hole, 3, 4, and 5 could once again all still be in play.
That's what I'm saying. Is I don't know if it increased the scoring separation.
It's just going to depend on...
The only thing this hole might have done that I think could be negative is I think basically just 3, 4, and 5 are in play. A 6 is in play maybe if you go for it.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know.
If you go for it...
I guess if you're going to trying to make a 4 and you go OB.
The guys... I mean, it seems like if you lay up the shot... If you're playing your third shot from a decent layup, it just seems like that across the water is really simple because like that's how you would take the 6 is messing up that shot.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying is like, I don't know. The island just looked pretty forgiving. It was deep. The basket wasn't super tucked to the water. It is an elevated basket. So I guess, if there's wind, the putting will be a little more tricky. You might see more missed 25, 30 footers. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, it'll be scenic, and like if they can get the crowd to surround that island, like it'll be sick. But
that's the other weird thing is I've been on this property and the bridge. You use the bridge of like you have a bridge to the island on 16, but then there's like one main walking bridge that's like the tee of 18. You like watch people tee off and you walk across this bridge.
Yeah.
But now it's almost unless they put another bridge in that I don't know of, which they very easily could have. Obviously, it's under new ownership. Then I think you'll use that bridge again. So I don't know if spectators will, like, cross the bridge and cross back. That was also the bridge you walked across to get to the parking lot. So I don't know if...
Need more bridges.
If there's an... I don't know. It'll be...
Bridge crisis.
It'll be interesting to see. But what I'm wondering is, before there was at least the... If you went for the 3, you could take a 5, which I think that stays the same. But, like, the... What I'm thinking here is, like, most people who decide, who throw an okay drive and decide I'm going to take a 4 will take a 4. So I'm wondering if it'll actually reduce the scoring separation because the 4 is a birdie now, which I know par is relative, but there's still a psychological thing of a 4 being par and 4 being birdie where like more players are going to be okay taking a 4 as birdie than okay taking a 4 as par.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't matter, it's the same score.
Right.
So I'm wondering if it's just going to end up creating less separation and just a whole bunch of fours. It'll just be interesting to see how it plays out. The wind out there seems moderate for Emporia. We're talking like 11, 12 mile an hour, but there are some thunderstorm chances on Saturday and rain coming in on Sunday.
Weather's been a nightmare so far this year.
I'm wondering, because like the spring, this is what you're always going to deal with, right? Disc golf, we've tested weird things before, like USDGC used to finish on Saturday. Spectators aren't a huge revenue source right now. I'm not the biggest fan of what I'm about to say, but because of our current resources, I'm wondering if it would be smart to have events finish on Saturday so that you have the Sunday as a contingency plan.
I don't.
Because right now, I feel like they're like, we can't push it to Monday because people have to go back to work.
Right. Yeah. I think that you have to figure out a way to get the contingency to Monday. I mean, even if there's nobody there, like, let the players play it out.
I feel like players are, like, there's still a lot of the field. Maybe not a lot of the field, but, like, they're worried about an extra Airbnb day. They're worried about travel. They're worried about getting back to their job Monday and stuff like that.
I don't know. Because, like, you still want to have that double weekend. I think it's...
This time of year, it just is going to happen. Maybe it's also a factor of, like, why are we playing in Emporia, Kansas in tornado season?
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. If you swing into the Midwest a little bit at this time of year, it's going to be unpredictable. I mean, people talked about that with Illinois. They were just like, yeah, this is just what Illinois weather does this time of year. You know, there's so many things that the Pro Tour, I feel like, just can't really work around with budget, schedule, where they're trying to accomplish. It's difficult. And the good news is we avoided it at Champions Cup. We got to see full tournaments, so it hasn't been a huge deal
yet. And it's scattered thunderstorms on Saturday, so we should avoid it here. We've only really seen it a few times historically.
Yeah.
So it might not even be a problem. But let's get into some storylines here. Last year, this was a tournament that Parker Welk took it down in one of the most surprising finishes of the year. Because I was looking back at a season to be like, was there any tells that we missed? No, not really. Like, yeah, I mean, he had like a 28th, 50 something. And like, that's kind of what we're seeing this year. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts of his chances this year?
Zero.
Ooh.
No, I'd give it 1%.
Yeah, I'd go like a half percent or 1%. Every player that shows up always has a chance. Not every player. Every touring player that shows up has at least a chance of winning.
Yeah, I mean, his game worked out for this course. But like, if you watched his game when he was winning this tournament last year, he was hot. Yeah, he was launching putts in. He could do nothing wrong with the disc. And he seemed like he had a very well-rounded game. So it's not like we get to DDO and we're just like, oh, you know, and it's not like the wind wasn't super high last year. So you can't just say like, oh, if the wind picks up, watch out for Parker Welk. You know, he seems like a guy with just a kind of a raw disc golf game, but has a lot of talent to where when he gets hot, he's as good as literally anybody. I mean, he was dueling Calvin Heimberg and beating him out there. So yeah, I think that was his weekend. So he's not going to be a name that surprises me if he bumps up the leaderboard maybe early in the event. You know, he's got the vibes from last year. He knows the course. He knows he's had success out there. He at least knows what the winning game plan is. But like I said, I think the winning game plan was you're going to make a heck of a lot of C2 putts and throw some of the best shots of your life. So that's always difficult to come back to that, be like, okay, I won a close one here and I played the best ever and threw the best shots ever. I have to do it again. Like, that's a difficult thing to accomplish. So, I mean, I'm definitely not zeroing in on it.
No, I agree. Like, it's one of those things where, he won last year and it was a shock.
Bigger shock win, Parker Welk winning that or Presnell winning Champions
Cup. Parker Welk winning this, I think. Because Presnell had been around for a little bit.
Yeah, I'd agree.
You know, he'd had, I don't think he'd had a top 10 in a major, but I think he'd come in like 12.
Well, he won a silver.
He had won a silver event. And again, like, there are just aspects of his game that Andrew Presnell is like very, very good at consistently.
Yeah.
Parker Welk,
he had never won an ATP or better.
Like, I had never really heard his name till DDO last year, and I don't think I've really heard his name since.
Well, I heard him when he got signed by DGA.
Yeah, when he left Prodigy.
I think I saw him on a leaderboard once this year where I was like, oh, there's Parker.
Yeah,
that was it.
So it'll be interesting. Now, Gannon and AB are still yet to finish outside the top 10 this year, and this course seems to, in your mind, line up well with both of their games. Which one do you think has a better chance at taking home their first DDO title this year?
I think AB does. I think he seemed a little more steady to me. I mean, they've both been ridiculously steady this year. Gannon hasn't been threatening as much, and I do think that, I don't know, this course, I feel like I could see Gannon getting frustrated, especially if there's some wind situation. I think, are we putting on veterans?
Yes.
Gannon's putt on veterans, enough said. AB takes the dub.
Yeah, no, I think I like AB's chances here more as well.
I mean, that's all I have to say is like I am picturing this event, and I don't think I could tie more spit outs in my head to any event with Gannon Burr than this event. Like,
yeah.
He's going to get 100.
No, I definitely. Now, it will be the new veterans, I would imagine, which apparently have different chains.
They're galvanized instead of stainless.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I'm not a steel guy enough to really know how much that's going to affect a disc catching, but I've been told it will be better. But I do think this is a course where it's not, I think it's a course that is very straightforward, but the wind is what brings a lot of the difficulty. Like I said, the wind is going to be relatively down. It'll still be windy,
yeah,
but it's not going to be like 25 plus mile
and
an hour. There might be gusts.
It's very scoreable when the wind's down.
That's what I'm saying. So, but I think it's a course that can be frustrating to players because of how scoreable it looks and then how unscoreable the wind can make it play at times is what makes that frustration happen. And when I'm thinking mental frustration, we've just seen it more out of Gannon than out of AB this year specifically.
Yeah.
If you go into history, that's not always true. And also, though, if you look at history, AB does have a top four finish out here back in 2019. Since then, neither of them have really had great success out here.
I mean, with,
but I don't really think, I think both of them have very, very, very solid chances of continuing their top 10 streak out here.
Yeah,
but I do lean
say.
Towards AB over Gannon on who's going to finish higher.
I like them both in the top 10 regardless. And I think they both, like, if I don't take one in the top three, it's probably because they were four. And it actually is because they were four. But yeah, this course can be interesting. They just posted the Pro Tour posted a clip of the Brody forehand.
Yeah, brutal.
That was skipping in towards the green, and is when it skipped, a gust of wind hit it so hard it just
it was
blew
on
it,
its like second skip.
It just blew it in a direction that a disc could never be moved in, and just out of bounds. Like
just
the most
it.
Disrespectful.
Yeah,
like,
it was
thing.
Like a it skipped.
Oh my
and
god,
it was
dude.
Fine. And then the second skip, it just bounced up and revealed the bottom of it to the wind a little bit, and the wind just tossed it like 40 feet left.
That is the type of stuff that like. Like, it will happen to you, and you'll be like, I will never step foot in the wind again.
That was the
he
year
also
that,
took third at that event.
Yeah, that was the year that, like, I think if you were just shooting close to par, you were winning. I think Ricky won that year with, like, a few
under. It was 10
and,
under.
Yeah, it was just crazy. And Drew Gibson, I think, sent the tweet of, like, this isn't even disc golf anymore at this point. And
it was
he had
crazy.
Some solid points of, like, why don't we have wind delays if the wind gets to this point? Like, that was a whole story. But I think... Was that year in April or was that... I think it was in April because I think last year they moved it to June. But the wind doesn't look like it's going to be that crazy
no.
this weekend.
The funny thing about wind golf is like I've always kind of been a guy who's like when the wind gets to a certain level, I don't really enjoy playing it that much. But when you embrace it and like just kind of like get on board with the fact that this is going to be chaos, you can enjoy it just because it's a little silly. The game is different. Like you're playing a whole different game out there.
I always like it because it just nullifies everyone's putt.
Well, right. Putting is not a huge part of the game anymore. It's all about angle control and like giving the wind as more credit than it even deserves on every shot. I actually kind of
it becomes
like,
a strategy game.
Yeah, it can get kind of fun.
Calvin Heimberg has had some success out here on this course, but is also looking for his first DDO title and his first win of the year out here. Is this the one for Calvin?
I mean, it's kind of like every event this year where it's going to be like, yeah, it could be. You know, he's probably going to be around. I imagine, you know, he's getting healthier. He didn't have a ton of success at Champions Cup per se. He did all right out there, but obviously, like, he's still seeking that major win and he didn't get it. So at the end of the day, yeah, I don't know. I think that this course should suit a ton of people's game, honestly. I think there is some strategy, but I honestly, like, the reason Parker Welk was able to win last year is because the wind went down and he got hot. So I think whenever you have a course that favors a hot hand, that's kind of tough for Calvin. Because like I said, the weird thing about Calvin is how often do we say, like, oh, Calvin had the hot hand? You know, he plays consistently greater than anybody else at most times. But how often do we say, oh, my gosh, Calvin was just scorching it for multiple rounds?
Yeah.
Just like he put together a tournament of just perfection. So that's what I'm waiting to see out of him. But I love his odds here, you know, as much as anything. And I just think it would be crazy to get out of the spring part of our season, which we're moving out of now, and Calvin not have a win. So, like, he really feels due.
Yeah, well, we're already in May, so it's already been a year since officially calendar year.
The first day
year
of summer is, like, the end of the month, right?
Yeah, it's beginning of June, yeah, somewhere in there. We're already over a year since Calvin's last win. What's weird is this course doesn't scream forehand friendly, but forehand players tend to do better out here. If you think back to the Aaron Gossage, you know, Paul McBeth Worlds battle, Parker Welk has a pretty solid forehand. Like, you see some forehand players. I'm wondering if it's a lot of, like, you need both almost because of the wind a lot of times, and you need to be able to control where you face. And we know right. Calvin is still dealing with that elbow injury, where that's part of, I think, why he didn't do as good as he had hoped at Champions Cup. It's just the elbow scrambling, forehands just aren't really happening. An open course like this, you can get by way better, but it will still be a factor. I think it's more so because it's a different thing when a player has had a forehand and that's taken away than a player who's always only been backhand, to where you just see and you want to throw a forehand and you just know, I can't, I got to go here. That affects confidence.
And this may be on your list, but is Eagle hopping back into this event, or is he not playing?
I believe he's taking this event off.
I
would have liked to have seen him here, but I think he's gone.
Yeah, I think he is as well.
Yeah. I'll confirm that on my phone. Yeah, he comes back at OTB.
That's what I thought. Yeah, this would have been an interesting one to see him at, just be able to stretch it out.
Well, he historically has had some really good success here, but I don't think this is the one for Calvin. I think this is a really good course for his game. Obviously, I won't be shocked. I put him in my top three, but I do think someone's going to get hot here. And I do think Calvin will have one round of the three where he's not. I think his worst round is probably like 6 under if the hot round's 10. But I think someone's going to go like 10, 9, 10, or they might even go 10, 10, 10. Because Ricky's won this event at 30 under before, I think. Or someone did.
Parker won at 31. Yeah. Paul won this event, and I think it was a 4 rounder, but it was at 42.
Yeah.
So,
like, that's what I'm saying. I think Calvin ends up being a few off pace, but I think it's in that Calvin fashion where he gets in it too little too late. I think is going
to
happen.
Pretty tough to say that you're going to win this tournament with a round worse than like 6 or 7 under. And if you're that low, you're going to need to have a really good one.
Yeah. Now, Ricky is coming off of back-to-back top three finishes and looking for his first win of the year. He has a little bit of home field advantage, this being the home of Dynamic Discs, obviously, and has good history out here with a Worlds win and a DDO title. Do you think he's the favorite coming into this event, or where do you put him?
You would like to say so, but the problem is Rick just hasn't been completely himself so far this year. I think if he maybe had notched a win or had been in contention a few more times early this season, we would say absolutely yes. But you can't necessarily go into an event saying that, I don't know, saying Ricky's the favorite right now just doesn't really add up for me, because I've still been waiting to see his best stuff. I think that he certainly has got to be high on that list, but I don't know. And I think this is an interesting one because we've had enough time now for Gannon to cool off, AB to cool off. You know, Antla's still been around, but like a lot of the certainty we had at the beginning of the season where it was very easy to pick out favorites is gone now, to where now you can kind of digest things. And I think that helps Ricky's case and probably pushes him closer, because it's not as easy to just be like, well, it's going to be AB or Gannon or, you know, Kyle Klein or whatever. So I think he's got to be up at the top of that list, but I still wouldn't call him the favorite. He's not my favorite. Well, I'll put it that way. He's not my favorite.
I really like Ricky out here. I think it's hard to have a favorite this season, because really with this course more than anything, because it's just like,
I mean, if we were headed to Music City or like an OTB Open type course after AB had just won 3, like, then I would say, he's going to be the favorite. But like, that's not the situation we're in right now.
Yeah. So I really like Ricky here. I do think for a player like Ricky, being at Dynamic Discs headquarters, having so many people he's close with that believe in him, that are hyping him up this week, I think a guy like Ricky really feeds off of that. And again, he does have good history here. And the back-to-back top threes, I think all that is pushing Ricky in the right direction. But the only thing that discourages me is at Champions Cup, he came out really hot that final round. It looked like vintage Rick, and then he sputtered. If he had held on to that, he had a chance at winning the thing. Obviously, he still came in third, a very, very, very solid finish in a major. But I would have liked to have just seen him been able to hold his foot down on the gas a little bit more. I think he's going to be able to do that a lot easier here than obviously at Champions Cup. So I don't know if I'm going to say he should be everyone's favorite, but I really, really like him at this event. Another player that always is like following Ricky right behind or right in front, depending on the year, is Paul McBeth. He has a super good history in Emporia with 5 wins at this event / GBO. Also had a Worlds win here, but he didn't play last year. And then in the crazy wind year of 2022, he came in 51st. What type of expectations do you have for Paul out here?
I think they should be pretty high. I mean, he's had success at this course, and I think he's now strung together back-to-back events with some hope, you know, in contention to win, and then at Champions Cup, at times in contention. And,
yeah.
And that course just did not promote foot on the gas golf if you had to play it. That's, you know, it's the reason Ricky sputtered. It's the reason Paul sputtered. It's like, if you were having to play aggressive, you might – sitting at the blackjack table, you get hot, you make five birdies in a row. You have to decide right then and there, okay, I'm up five strokes. I need to stop playing that style of golf before it blows up in my face. And a lot of guys just didn't decide to do that. And maybe that wouldn't have been enough anyways, but that's kind of what happened to them in Northwood. So I think Paul, I expect to see him in the top 15, you know, and it kind of in the mix again at this event. I think things have been trending upward for him in a positive direction. I hope he can continue doing that, because he can really change the narrative if, you know, from here on out, he can continue to string really good events together, especially as we move closer and closer to Worlds.
Yeah.
If he can keep building that resume, maybe he snags a win. Who knows? You know, if he doesn't run into a flaming hot Simon Lazat, he might already have one. And, yeah, I think his season, just the last few weeks, have changed a lot about the way I perceived his season. He's really kind of a fringe win potential guy for me right now, whereas before I wasn't even considering him.
No, 100%, because if you look at his season, it started at 52nd at Chess.com, 64th at Waco, 22nd at the Open at Austin, 57th at Jonesboro. But then the last 2 weeks, he's went second at Music City, 10th at Champions Cup. So coming into another event that has history on tour, there's not a lot of changes to the Emporia Country Club other than the name, realistically. So he's going to be comfortable out here. He's going to know this course. I think all of that plays in his favor. I think that the more he can get to places that he's comfortable, that he's confident in, and the more he can keep proving to himself and to everyone else, like, why aren't you saying my name more often? So I think this could be a sneaky one that Paul could walk away with the win. I don't think he's the favorite. I definitely think that there's enough guys that this course suits their games better in front of him. But I think I really expect him to be kind of top 10 here. I really expect him to kind of get himself into the conversation, maybe make an appearance on a lead card. And if things fall the right way and his putt gets hot, especially if his circle two putt, he can find that and it gets really hot, then yeah, he could easily push some people aside and walk away here. And if he got a win here, that could really change the narrative of his season, because,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
obviously the European Open, now that Paul is the last 2 weeks played more Paul style golf, like more in contention, what you expect, he's now becoming another player you're gonna be thinking of for the European Open. He's been a guy you're thinking of for Worlds the whole time. And like, when these majors start rolling around, if the more Paul can kind of hang around the golf he's been playing the last 2 weeks, the more he's going to become the favorite going into those events. And if he could notch a win here, that's especially going to be huge for his confidence and the fan base's confidence in Paul.
Yeah.
And disc golf's just better when Paul McBeth's in contention. So I'm expecting this to be a weekend where he is in contention. It'll be very interesting to see there. Now, are there any other players that you have your eye on this week?
Yeah, I think there are just a lot of players that can win out here. Honestly, I think it's wide open. So I look to other guys who have had good seasons so far. I mentioned before Antola, Kyle Klein. Is Antola still in town?
That is a good question.
He might have gone to Europe.
For you.
If not Antola, then Kyle Klein would be the first one I would look to. I also just think this is a track that hasn't changed a lot over the years. So if you know how to navigate it, and especially if you've had really good success here.
He is not. He is headed home.
He had one. Okay, so Kyle Klein, that's a bummer. But I think that, you know, Matty O is a player I think of, played well last year. Alden Harris also had a really good event last year, but kind of been waiting for him to break out a little bit. I'm somebody I have my eye on that I'm just waiting to do something right now is Isaac Robinson. His brother's been playing well. Just, I think this is a course, like, Isaac Robinson, his game should just work out here. I think he just needs to set his sights somewhere different right now. Just be like, okay, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to play clean golf, just execute the shots, land where I need to, and see where I end up. And I think if he just can focus on that, not get caught up in any narratives, you know, he had a huge season. I'm sure he's under a bigger contract. He's got probably all these things going for him, and there's pressure associated with that. What I think he just needs to go out there and say, okay, I'm going to play my game as clean as I can, and let's just see where we end up. And I feel like if he does that, he can be inside the top 20 comfortably. You know, he's got the talent to do so. So that's a guy I'm just continuing to watch this year to see like when he can figure it out.
Yeah, surely at some point he will.
Has to.
You would think.
I mean, my goodness, he was unstoppable. There was, at times last year, it was like he could just reach out and put the disc wherever he wanted.
Yeah. And you brought up Matty O. He podiumed here last year. And the year before that, he came in 107th with the DNF. But the two rounds, that was a crazy wind year. And he was sitting under par through the first two rounds. So I don't remember if it was an injury or what exactly led to that DNF. But that was interesting. He doesn't have much history before that, though. But the times he has played well. The other player I wanted to mention is Aaron Gossage. We saw him in that battle with Paul at Worlds. He came in 12th place here last year. He's had a overall solid start to this season. He's got himself in contention and then kind of fallen off a little bit, but he hasn't really fallen outside the top 25. So this could be one where he could get himself kind of back in the mix. I think this is actually a somewhat important moment for Aaron Gossage's season because, like I said, he started off really hot. He's kind of fallen out of a lot of minds of people because he's just been hanging around that like top 20 to top 30. If he can get himself back in contention here, it could just be a like, hey, I'm staying around all season type of a thing. Make or break, no, but I do think he's a player that could get in contention here, could get hot, and he could realistically charge for a win if things go the right way.
Gossage, you're hoping for that win to pick up because, you know, I think in my mind he's underperformed a little bit this year. He started off pretty well, but it's just kind of been a little quiet on his end. He's been playing solid golf, but I really think that he's one of the better throwers out there. His putt is just... it holds him back a lot, and we see that all the time.
Yeah. Now, before we throw it over to Joe for FPO, I want to let you all know that she has stepped into a new role at her job that is taking up a lot more time. She also has some things going on in her personal life that she wants to dedicate more time to, and so she will be stepping away after this show. I want to really thank Joe for all the work she put into this show. Hopefully, we can work with her again in the future at some point, whether on this show or another one. If you've also enjoyed seeing Joe do the FPO preview for us so far this year, one more time, we have it linked in the description down below where you can check out her personal YouTube channel where I believe she still has plans to upload different rounds and playing stuff like that. And you can also find her other social media through that YouTube channel as well. So thanks again to Joe. We're going to throw it over to her one more time for the FPO preview.
We just had Champions Cup, and now we're actually heading over to Emporia, Kansas, to play the Dynamic Discs Open. And we actually have a brand new name for this course. It's called the Champions Landing Course, which is very exciting. A new year and a new name. Last year, we had Haley King and Holland Hanley battling it out on the final round. And there was lots of movement up and down the leaderboard. I know that Ella Hansen was also in the mix. And lots of lead changes. So yeah, this round was pretty dramatic and pretty exciting. We ended up having Holland Hanley actually ended up securing an eagle to force a playoff on the final hole on hole 18, which is just nuts. So definitely, definitely high stakes going on here. And Haley King ended up getting a birdie on the 18th hole. So yes, they had a playoff. They started at hole 16, which was the first playoff hole. And now in the beginning of the round, like during the actual round, when they got to hole 16, we had Holland Hanley actually card a bogey and Haley ended up carding the birdie. So already there's a two-stroke swing. Haley threw first. She ended up sticking the island and then Holland threw just barely missing the island. She hit the island's edge and then trickled down into the water and she went over to try and make a drop zone putt. And she unfortunately did not make the putt and Haley ended up cashing her putt to secure her win. Haley finished at minus 19 and Holland finished at minus 19 also because they were tied. And then we had Ella Hansen coming in one stroke behind them at minus 18. So there could have been a three-way tie to force a playoff, which is just crazy to me. I actually think all three of these players have such a good shot at taking down this event again. And I know that Missy Gannon was also on that lead card on the final day as well. She also has a very good chance. We have quite a few players that are missing from this event. We have no Paige Pierce, no Sarah Hokum because she just actually had ankle surgery, so she's recovering and we're sending our good wishes to her. We have no Kristen Tatar and quite a few other Europeans are headed back to Europe right now. So that would be like Evelina, Henna, Silva Saarinen. I believe Rachel Turton is probably headed back. Yeah, Heidi Linja is probably headed back. Luca Lorenzen. All these players are probably headed back to Europe because we actually have Copenhagen Open coming up soon, which is a part of the Disc Golf Pro Tour in Europe. So that's exciting. Champions Landing looks pretty similar to last year, as far as I'm concerned, maybe a couple hole switch ups. and maybe different pin placements. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, it's like relatively the same. The front nine is when you want to secure your birdies and maintain getting those pars. And the back nine is when you want to avoid the bogeys and just continue to save par, because the birdies are a little bit trickier to grab in the back nine. But yeah, this weekend looks really good. I'm wondering, will Holland, will Ella and Missy and Haley, will they all be on lead card again? Will they all be trying to fight and battle for the win? Or will we have a brand new leaderboard? I wonder, and I'm definitely going to tune in to find out. I hope that you do too, and back over to you guys.
Yeah, as Joe mentioned, I think this weekend's going to be very, very interesting in FPO because we've lost pretty much all the international players. Yeah. A lot of players. We even just saw Niklas in MPO, or Niklas, I think is how you're actually supposed to say it. They're heading home towards to Europe for the to get ready. I think a lot of them are playing the Copenhagen Open and some of these European swing events. So for FPO, we lost a huge chunk out of the top of the field. Just saw Evelina Salonen win a major, gone. The player that was next closest to her that hit that big eagle, Henna Blomroos, out of there. I believe Silva Saarinen out of there. I think even Rachel Turton, she's British. Pretty sure she's out of here too. Kristen Tatar, gone. Like Lorenzen, like all these players that made up a really big chunk of our top 10, top 15 FPO players are missing, which leaves the FPO field kind of wide open right now. Is still some consistent threats here with Missy Gannon and Owen Scoggins top of the mind coming into this event. What are your thoughts on their games with this course?
I think their games apply to every course. You know, I'm just going to put that out there. But I do think that they are going to have their hands full, because when you mention all those players gone, the rest of the field is going to be hungry. You know, it's going to be, there are so few. I mean, stepping in and having to be, you know, Owen and Missy have been great. And there's a few other Americans that have been great. But like stepping into an event knowing, okay, today I don't have to beat Henna, Evelina, or Kristen. That is a huge, like, I mean, there's three spots I'm finishing higher in this tournament, basically.
Yeah.
So I really think that there's going to be a lot of players who are very, very motivated at this event. And we could see some surprises for sure. Yeah. I think so.
Well, I think Missy and Owen's game, like you said, applies to a lot of courses. I don't think this is a course that they're like specialized in. Like, I don't think either of their games is like, this is the best, but they're the most consistent. Yeah. So will they be at the top? Yeah. Will one of the two of them most likely win? Probably. But last year, this was the battle with a playoff between Holland Hanley and Haley King.
Yeah.
So are we expecting both of them in contention again this year?
Haley, no. Haley's had a lot of struggles this year so far, just haven't quite seen it. And it's been disappointing because I think she made a step forward last year, and so far it's been a step back. Holland, absolutely. I think Holland's been playing solid golf this season, and I think this course will suit her game quite nicely. I expect pretty big things from Holland.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I think Holland Hanley's a player to beat this weekend.
I would agree.
I think this course lines up with her. I think she's going to have confidence from last year. I think she's been having a pretty solid season, and I think that she's going to be able to go toe-to-toe with Missy and Owen this weekend. Another player that could be brought in is Ella Hansen.
Yeah.
But that's kind of been disappointed by Ella so far this year, so it'll be interesting to see what happens in FPO. But it should be a very, very exciting FPO tournament, I think, because like I said, a lot of the players that are in contention week in and week out are gone, which means this thing just got into even more of a dogfight. Little points update as we head into predictions. Trevor has opened up a pretty big lead on me, being able to pick Owen Scoggins in second correctly and Ricky Wysocki in third correctly at a major. Earned you a lot of points.
Just barely,
I also updated the point I owed you from the bet as well.
Nice,
so
nice.
Trevor is now at 51 points. I am at 38, 13 points behind him. Luckily, we got three more majors. So I have plenty of time to make this up, but
I
need to start making some headway.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet, but like there is realistically a chance where somebody could just go ballistic and get like, I mean, we could be...
Well, you had two players writing at 12
points.
You
could see somebody could get like 25 points in a major.
Well, four... Yeah, if you get four of the top six right, that's 24 points alone right there. Add in the dark, you could easily get over 30 points in a major.
You could
go
crazy.
It ain't over till it's over, but this isn't a major, so we're just dealing with normal points here. I'll kick it off with my MPO picks. I do think this is the weekend for Ricky Wysocki. How many times have I said that this year? I don't know.
But I think that's like three in a row.
But give me Ricky taking it down. I like Anthony Barella in second, and I'm putting Calvin Heimberg in third. I'm not putting Gannon Burr just because I think between the baskets and the wind, I think he's going to be top five.
This is a fun
but one. I just don't know.
This is a fun one because we have the same three. I flip-flopped Calvin and Rick. I've got Calvin in first, AB second, Ricky third.
There you go.
So
I'm imagining FBO we're going to be pretty similar too.
Ready? On the count of three, we'll say all three from first to third.
Okay.
One, two, three. Hall and Missy.
Oh! Okay. So we flipped the middle there.
We're crazy.
Yeah, we went a little crazy there. Hall and winning.
Switching Owen and Missy for me last week paid off. That's so. It.
Now, dark horse, who you got?
I took Adam Hammes because he slipped out of the top 30 in the PDGA World Rankings, which is our criteria. He's in 31st now. And his season hasn't been awful. It's just been quiet. But if anything I know about Adam Hammes is, first of all, he's probably not going to do anything crazy bad. Like, he probably will still take top 30. But he can just come out of nowhere and win.
Yeah, I'm going with Kevin Jones here.
I like that pick.
I looked at him historically at this course, and he just does kind of solid. I think his best finish might be 20th this year. So what I'm hoping for is a top 15 graphic to be on his Instagram after this weekend. I think if he does that for me, it'll be enough to bring me home some points for the dark horse pick. But get out there this weekend. Watch some disc golf with the Dynamic Disc Open going down. Should be electric, and we'll be back Monday to wrap it all up for you on Grip Locked.